We're going to look at some geopolitical activities across the world, doing that with Ken Timmerman. He's a man who travels, just in fact returned from France, where he was there for a couple of weeks. But he's all over the world, and because of his worldwide travel, his activities of journalism in the past, and as an author, he's able to analyze situations, and that's so important to us as we bring him to the broadcast table. Ken, let's get right underway. Iran can build a nuclear weapon by October the 1st. That is what some of the intel agencies are saying. That does put it real tight as far as a possible preemptive strike by Israel.
Well, it does indeed, Jimmy, and this is dramatic new information. I will say it was predictable because essentially what this is taking the public information from the International Atomic Energy Agency about Iran's enrichment activities and coupling that to other information that's known about their weapons development. So we know exactly how many kilograms or how many pounds, if you prefer, of 20% enriched uranium the Iranians have already made. And we will know that by October 1st, they will have about 250 pounds of it, which is more than enough to make a first generation, an early generation atomic device. We also know, and this is from both the International Atomic Energy Agency, so it's public information if you wish, we also know that they have done extensive testing on a first-generation nuclear weapons design. They have cold-tested most of the components, all of the non-nuclear components they have cold-tested in Iran. So this is a wake-up call. This is, I believe, the real last red line that Israel cannot allow Iran to cross.
And the leadership of Israel are talking about it publicly, I'm sure privately as well. The defense minister there, Ehud Barak, making a statement, we do not have very long to either make a decision to go or no go. Meanwhile, the president of the country, Shimon Peres, comes out saying, don't do it. He was chastised by Prime Minister Netanyahu, who said that the president is a ceremonial position. We appoint him. He should not be talking about things like that. I will make the decision with the other cabinet members. But it does look like Israel's going to have to make a decision pretty quick, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And I have heard from my own sources, Jimmy, that they are looking at the end of September, maybe earlier than that. At any rate, it would be after the two nominating conventions here in the United States for the presidential nominees. They believe that that will be a more propitious time, and it will be harder for Barack Obama to oppose an Israeli strike once the nominating conventions are over.
Meanwhile, Iran is brushing off the threat of an Israeli preemptive strike.
Well, the Iranians do that periodically. You know, they claim that they have put everything underground, and we know that they put a lot of their material underground and a lot of their facilities underground. And it's unclear if the Israelis, and this has always been my problem with an Israeli strike, it's unclear if the Israelis have the technology and the weaponry to actually destroy those deep underground bunkers. It's also unclear whether the Israelis will have the intelligence to know exactly where the Iranians have hidden the equipment or hidden the nuclear material. This is a big deal. It's really a nuclear shell game, Jimmy. The Iranians move stuff around, and unless the Israelis or the United States have really, really good intelligence, up-to-the-minute intelligence, they might wind up hitting the wrong site. I cannot imagine that Israel would launch a strike without having that kind of intelligence.
Well, and the United States, you brought them into the equation as well. Some Israeli leaders are saying that all this radical rhetoric coming out of Iran and then the response by the Israeli leadership is for the purpose of trying to get the United States involved. Do you think they'll step up, or are they going to stand by and watch?
I don't think that the U.S. is going to get engaged at this point. I've seen that Barack Obama certainly has not been talking about Iran at all on the campaign trail. He's just trying to make political points against Mitt Romney. And I would be a little bit surprised to see him change his tune and become aggressive militarily in anything other than a drone strike.
Yes, and at the same time, Ayatollah Ali Khomeini, who is the head of the Supreme Council there in Iran, along with President Ahmadinejad, both saying that the Zionist regime is going to disappear, and pretty quickly now.
Well, this is the kind of rhetoric they've used for years. They say Israel will be wiped off the map or erased from the pages of geography. I mean, it's a flowery statement in Persian, which we basically understand. And they translate themselves, by the way, into English as saying Israel will be wiped off the map. We've seen this for a number of years when they have their military parades and they put their missiles on parade. They have English language banners, Jimmy, that say that Israel will be wiped off the map. So this is something that clearly is a goal of the Islamic Republic of Iran leadership. They've wanted to do this for years. Now what we're seeing, they're coming close to achieving the capability to do it, and that is frightening indeed.
Ken, we cannot talk with you without mentioning the situation in Syria. What's the update on that?
Well, ironically, the United Nations is saying that it will be pulling out its observer mission. Why? Because nobody respects them, and that's not a surprise. But now it's the Russians who are trying to urge the United States to weigh in with the UN to keep their mission there. Now, I say this is ironic because it's the Russians who've been helping the Syrian regime. It's the Russians and the Iranian regime that have been helping Bashar al-Assad. So for the Russians, this is kind of like crocodile tears. For the Russians to say, we've got to keep the United Nations in Syria, it's almost comic.
You know, one time I remember, maybe 6 or 7 months ago, you were on the border there between Iraq and Iran among the Kurds. You know something about the Kurds. And there was an article I read this week that said the Syrian Kurds may well benefit from this Syrian crisis. And let me remind everybody, you have Kurds there in eastern Turkey, in western Syria or northern Syria, and also there in western Iraq. Talk to us about the Kurds. What may this be for them as it relates to what's going on?
A very, very interesting situation, Jimmy, and you're right. I was on the border with Iran, with the Iranian Kurdish resistance, PAJAK, just a couple of months ago, and we actually, you spoke to me. We got up on a very interesting telephone liaison out in the middle of nowhere, I got to tell you. But the Kurds will indeed, do indeed stand to benefit from the chaos in Syria. They now control a good deal of territory in the northern part of the country, and this is because the Syrian government forces have been forced out of those areas. What I am worried about is the way Turkey will intervene. Turkey despises the Kurds. They have been whacking their own Kurds for the past 20 years. They do not allow Kurds to speak their own language. They do not allow Kurdish to be spoken in schools. They do not allow Kurdish culture to be accepted as part of Turkey. They call them Mountain Turks, which is an outrage. It's a pejorative label. The Kurds have the desire to build a greater Kurdistan. Okay, that would include the Kurdish populations in Syria, Iran, Iraq, and Turkey. Turkey absolutely doesn't want that to happen. The Iranians absolutely don't want that to happen. The Assad regime has not wanted that to happen. But if there is a Kurdish enclave in northern Syria, that could be the first step towards a greater Kurdistan.
And indeed, they would have a piece of real estate and then a nation.
They would have a piece of real estate, a nation, and a very close ally in the Iraqi Kurds. There is a Kurdish regional government which borders that area in Syria. And obviously, I've been there many times, and the Iraqi Kurds right now are in a real power struggle with Baghdad over oil revenues, over national budget revenues and resources and political autonomy. And they have warned repeatedly in the past year that they could, in fact, secede from Iraq should the government in Baghdad not give them what they want. So this is a situation that could have larger geopolitical implications, Jimmy.
Well, just briefly, if indeed the Kurds in Iraq were to pull out from that coalition of the Sunnis, the Shiites, and the Kurds, that would make an unstable government really fall apart.
Well, it would probably also lead to a pretty bloody civil war. Saddam Hussein fought two wars against the Kurds, and I imagine that al-Maliki will do the same thing, and this time he'll do it back with Iran. So you'd have an Iranian-Iraqi war against the Kurds. That's why I say we'll have regional implications.
Ken Timmerman, he's the man that covers geopolitical activities for us. He's in the Washington, D.C. area, and we so appreciate him taking some time out of his busy schedule, that of running for United States Congress there in that part of Maryland, to join us right here on Prophecy Today and give us insight into what is really going on in our world. Ken, thank you so very much, my good friend. We'll talk again real soon.
Jimmy, thank you. God bless.